Although the Lord was pained by the shaft-like abusive words of the demon, he bore the pain. By seeing that the earth on the ends of his tusks was frightened, he rose out of the water just as an elephant emerges with its female companion when assailed by an alligator. So here we are with the Prabhupada's purport, and it says, the Mayavadi philosopher cannot understand that the Lord has feelings. The Lord is satisfied if someone offers him a nice prayer. And similarly, if someone decries his existence or calls him by ill names, God is dissatisfied. So over on the right, we have a nice picture, famous picture of Krishna sitting on the rock with a calf and Vrindavan Dham. And I've heard Prabhupada said this is the closest picture to Krishna you've seen like that. So, yeah. But he's a person. He has his calf and his cow and his feelings. Yeah. So the Mayavadi philosophers, they can't understand this, that Krishna has feelings. If we offer a nice prayer, he's satisfied. And we decry his existence or call him names, bad names, he's dissatisfied. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is decried by the Mayavadi philosophers, who are almost demons. They say that God has no head, no form, no existence, and no legs, hands, or other bodily limbs. In other words, they say that he is dead, or lame. You know? All these misconceptions of the Supreme Lord are a source of dissatisfaction to him. Source of dissatisfaction. He is never pleased with such atheistic descriptions. So if you can see it on the right-hand side, we have a very, you know, beautiful lion. Looks like someone's been washing his beard. And everything else, very clean, you know, but he's a little disgusted. The lion is dissatisfied, you know, with people's descriptions like that. In this case, although the Lord felt sorrow, you know, from the piercing words of the demon, he delivered the earth for the satisfaction of the demigods who are ever his devotees. You know? So it says, however, in this case, although the Lord felt sorry, because what the meaning is, maybe like because he felt sorrow, he might have become depressed and, you know, given up and gone away. Because we do something because we want some reward with that. You know? And a lot of times the reward, of course, is just social prestige. Because if you have social prestige, then you have more influence over other people and their resources, like that, and so on. You know? So you might think that the Lord is doing these things for the same reasons. You know? He's doing it for prestige, honor, and when he's not receiving this kind of respect, you know, from Hiranyaksha, he might feel like, I'll go someplace else. And you won't have Dick Nixon to kick around anymore. Yeah, but he's not like that. You know, he's doing his duty. It's interesting because we could look at it, we don't always want to do our duty. It's boring or troublesome, but we do it, you know, sometimes. You know. But Krishna also takes up his duty, which is to take the earth out of the water for the satisfaction of the demigods. So although he felt sorrow from the piercing words of the demon, he delivered the earth for the satisfaction of the demigods who are ever his devotees. Okay. The conclusion is that God is as sentient as we are. He is satisfied by our prayers and dissatisfied by our harsh words against him. In order to give protection to his devotee, he is always ready to tolerate insulting words from the atheists. Yeah. So, insulting words from the atheists and maybe again, it was disturbing to him. It says he was dissatisfied Hiranyaksha was offering dissatisfying, you know, words to the Lord, but he tolerated all this, right? Tolerance. Utsahan nishchaya darya tata karma pavarta. Utsahan nishchaya darya. He had tolerance. And they went ahead and did his duty. It always impresses us because we might think that, well, you know, again, that God is so great that he takes no interest in this world. Because some people that has actually no idea of God whatsoever. They're just simply thinking of, somehow or other, trying to think of totally impersonal laws. I always remember one time we were with Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj. We were visiting one chemist, four or five devotees, who was a very famous person, actually a Nobel laureate. And he was had a big model, one of these sticks and balls models you can get, some kind of organic molecule, a very big thing with maybe 15 carbon atoms. And of course, they would then be connected up by little pegs, which went into the holes and stuff and connected it all together like that. So it was totally impersonal, But during this whole interview, we had a long talk and stuff about different things with the Bhaktivedanta Institute. And then during the discussion, this thing would pop open here and there. He would look at it in a very threatening fashion and push it back together again. And it would pop out someplace else because of the tension on the structure. And he would just stare at it again, threateningly, and put it back together again, This was like he was trying to intimidate this molecule to stay together, So in the end, Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj maybe made some comment about, it looks like a so-and-so lipid or lipid acid or something, And what is that, Dr. Dr. So-and-so? And he kind of smiled and said, so-and-so, and I say it's stable, but other people say it's not stable. He was saying, a little proudly saying, I'm always involved in these controversies and things like that. He was proud of it, a little proud of it, defeating his rivals. But he was saying it was stable, but all throughout this lecture, the thing kept popping open like that. And you could actually see, at least according to the model, it wasn't stable. But you could also see that it wasn't impersonal. Even though the whole thing was impersonal, and why should you be concerned about it? And the structure you're talking about is an impersonal structure. But he was taking it very personally, which is maybe why he was such a great chemist. He got a Nobel Prize in chemistry. Because he actually entered into these levels of things at a personal level. It all meant things, different atoms and molecules. These atoms and molecules were being very recalcitrant or very naughty, and he was threatening them. And maybe so, out of fear of him, all the lipid acid, whatever it is in the world, are acting in a certain way, afraid of he's gonna harass us or something, So this is the conclusion, that God is as sentient as we are. He is satisfied with our prayers, and dissatisfied by our harsh words. So this is, again, it's very amazing. This is a section for me is very incredible, because we are so tiny, we're so small. You start looking at any of these kind of descriptions of the cosmos and really begin to realize how tiny we are in so many ways like that, and how tiny is our influence and so on. It's a little bit of, again, it's a whole world raised 15 degrees or something. Just 15 degrees, if our body temperature raises 5 degrees, we're in trouble, very serious trouble. 10 degrees, I think, is almost as guaranteed death, if you're not dead already. So very, very, very limited range of human existence, and very, very limited, strength and control we have. And we think we're coming to the point where we're going to master the universe, We can't even really master stuff we think we have, but it's a little bit of change in the ecostructure with different species readjusting or changing the temperature of the earth, Boom. All of our influence is gone like that. But still, on the other hand, is a Krishna is so great that even the smallest thing interests him. We can be small, but Krishna is powerfully aware of things. His intelligence, his ability to experience things. And another factor is besides his chit potency, this is all, of course, on the sat level. This is kind of strange anyway. But okay, it's all on the sat level of eternality. And then the sat fact is, eternal fact in all circumstances, that Krishna is very, very intelligent, chit. He can know things in great detail. You know? Ananda. And his character ultimately is pleasure seeking. You know? So just like we're looking for a compliment, fishing for a compliment. You know, it seems like Lord Varaha in these stories is also fishing for a compliment. In my experience, this is maybe one of the most, you know, what's the most like emotional or, you know, ras-laden sections in the whole Bhagavatam. It really seems like a whole joke, you know. If you've seen like boars, of course in Vrindavan we see pigs. You know? But it's amazing, you very seldom see a boar. If you ever see a boar, you always see the sows and stuff running around. But anyway, even the boars, of course Vrindavan, well, they're like, you know, walking around the muck, you know. I always remember we were in Madras, you know, for the movie 1984. You know, it was a science congress. Bhakti Sudhamanaras was organizing, working on organizing the first world congress for a synthesis of science and religion. You know, big program with several Nobel laureates. But before that, while we were in Madras, as a build-up program, I had a lecture series on one lecture, symposium. It was a whole day long thing on spiritual knowledge, the missing link in modern education. Spiritual knowledge, the missing link in modern education. In India, a little more simple. You know? But the program was supposed to go on. It went on all day, and we had like very big, responsible political people and intellectual people and stuff like that. And trying to approach this whole point about the existence of the soul and its nature and so on, and the purpose of the cosmos, you know, from a scientific point of view. But we also had a very, very nice brochure, you know, program with some citations about the content of the program and actually what's going to happen and so forth and so on. So I was put in charge of getting that printed and getting stuff done in India with no vehicle and everything else. A really amazing project. You know. But I had to walk to the printers, you know, through Madras, 1984. And one bridge went right over what looked like to be the central sewer. The central sewer for Madras and all the other, you know, little sewers and their water feeding into this one central sewer. So even in the morning, this was like in the wintertime or something, but even already it was hot. In the summertime, it was just beyond belief in terms of intolerable for my kind of body. Somewhere we were there and it was already getting hot in the morning. I had to cross over this one bridge over this, you know, river of excrements, urine, pus, garbage wastes, all this kind of stuff. And it was just kind of slow moving, and maybe even bubbling or something. It's like, I mean, the last thing on earth you wanted to fall into or something. You know? So I was walking over and then looking down, the cars going, Indian cars and traffic and rickshaws going my one side. I looked down this river below, and it may be like about 20 feet, 25 feet below the bridge. And off on one side there was a beach. You know, the land was like a little bit flat, maybe like about 10 feet deep, 15 feet deep. And on the beach were many sunbathers on the beach or the river of excrement or whatever it was. And there were different pigs, maybe like, you know, some were lying there, and a couple mother pigs and all the babies, maybe eight baby piglets were all sucking their milk, you know. And of course the milk was nothing but a transformation of the stuff coming out of this garbage. So for like us, maybe like a river of mango juice or something like that, some river of, you know. But for the pigs, it was amazing. The pigs was looking at it and stuff. They looked at it like, what a god, this is life good. This is the life. A river of slow-moving garbage. You know? Yeah. And there was one guy, I guess he arrived late or something, you know, but he was still out there working away. And he was an amphibious beast. He was in the water. He was swimming. You know? I realized that. And everybody else had finished their work for the day, kicking back. So he was just going along. He was going along with just enough out of the water so his nose was out of the water and his eyes. And everything else, he was just like chompity, chompity, chompity in this kind of tasting stuff and spitting it out and looking for some really juicy stuff there he could eat. And stuff. Yeah. And I was thinking, this is like the Kanishta Adhikari. Kanishta Adhikari. He wants to engage in just enough devotional service to keep his nose above it all, like that. Yes, I can identify with that. You know? So this is the situation. But when they come out of the water, You know, they have these, their feet look like high heel shoes. They look like somebody standing on high heel shoes. They're not flat like a cow or something or an elephant, but it looks like they're kind of on their toes. And then they're kind of going back. And so it looks like there's somebody wearing stylish high heel shoes. You know, even imagine some man, you know, wearing something like that. And then, you know, on the ankles, there's this kind of like nice spiny curving hair. And of course, the shoulders are, you know, powerful shoulders, you know, and smaller hips. And the back, of course, the back of the neck is this really curved pictures. I showed a picture of this. Curved hairs like that. And it goes on like that with these tusks. And the tusks, of course, you can cut paper on them. They're so sharp and refined like that. So anyway, it's pretty, a real boar. You know, he's not a boar. He's a very powerful guy, very handsome in some ways, with powerful muscles and, you know, so on. But so it looks like somebody with a pompadour hairdo, but it looks like somebody really was into all his clothing and that kind of stuff, but same time, too, had some kind of like an alcohol addiction, you know, with a kind of puffy red nose or something, you know. Yeah. But at the same time, too, he was so ignorant, he thought he looked really good, you know. So this is Lord Bor. Lord Bor is coming out of the water, and he's like a really powerful boar, muscular and beautiful. Prabhupada said there's a big difference between, Prabhupada said there's a world of difference between Lord Bor and the ordinary village hog, like that. So, but Hiranyaksha is in this low level of consciousness, and so he sees, you know, Varaha, and he can't appreciate the transcendental nature, you know, the beautiful beauty, the motion, everything else like that, and so on. And Krishna's kind of taking on this incarnation. Again, it seems like a joke. You know, he's actually, you know, trying it out. He thinks, I look really good. I'm really good looking now and stuff, and strutting his clothes. And what happens is idiot comes along and calls him an amphibious beast. You know? Amphibious beast. And then Braha responds by saying, true it is, that we are beasts of the forest, but we are used to hunting and killing dogs like you. Pig, dog, like that. So they're carrying on back and forth with their exchange of repartees and mental so-and-so. You know? And this is all just the beginning. After that, we're going to have the whole pastime of actually their actual fight and Prabhupada's description of this, all his fighting activities and so on. You know? And finally, his destruction. Yadyara charati srestas tatareva tarojanaha. Tatareva tarojanaha. Whatever it is. No, it's another one. Sorry. Yada yada hidharmasya gvanir bhavati bharata. Abhutanam adharmasya taratmanam surajamiyaham. Paritvaranaya sadunam vinaschaya chaduskritam. Dharmasam starpanartaya sambhavami yuge yuge. So again and again, Krishna comes for this purpose in the material world, like that. But also to have pleasure meetings with his devotees, you know, because they're competent enough to actually engage in these different activities. You know. Again, there's primary rasa. So the primary rasa may be servitorship. The seven secondary rasas, which can go on the basis of a primary rasa. So maybe the rasa here is like Hiranyaksha, Hiranyakasi, put towards Krishna is servitorship. And one of the sub-rasas is a horror, like that. You know, horror and terror. You know, so these very, very negative rasas. Actually, Shantarasa is where the horror is almost always manifest in somebody in Shantarasa. So maybe more appropriate than to say the giant Vijaya, maybe more in Shantarasa. You know? But they're actually doing something, though. The cows and the flutes and stuff and the flower gardens are all in Shantarasa, but they don't do anything. So here it would be hard to think of as anything less than dasya ras. You know? But so then eventually there's this point of feeling horror because of the greatness of God and terror. In terror we feel fear because of the greatness of God and everything else. You know? So we're appreciating his greatness, you know? And maybe engaging in this fight because he wants to fight. So are Jaya and Vijaya terrified? Maybe they're feeling some... At some point, they are. That's the point. At some point, it seems like at the end, after being properly educated by Lord Varaha, they came to this point of feeling terror on the basis of their service attitude, like that and so on. Yeah. But they serve Krishna. in that mood, you know, terror. So it appears that even Krishna even appreciates terrifying people. Terrifying people. Who was it? I remember one devotee, we vomited, John. We were describing your staying with one devotee from the California coast. It was a very beautiful place up in the Northern California with, you know, lots of nice agricultural whatever. And they walked down maybe 1/8 of a mile, like maybe 6 blocks or something. One big block, to get down to the mailbox, but the side of the road, other side of the road was the open beach. And so they came down, and all of a sudden this giant, like German shepherd, just jumped out with stiff legs and just roared at them and snarled. And he and his wife were sure that was it. They were just going to get ripped to pieces right there the mailbox. But then he said the dog completely changed his thing, like he was laughing. He was like, just changed it and stuff. And was, he had been doing this, making a joke. This dog had been joking like that and stuff. And after that, he just walked along with them and kind of smelled around and stuff like that and so on. Yeah. So this humor is everywhere, even animals. You see this in Vrindavan, India. You see so many animals playing jokes, you know, and doing different things like that. So this is the actual nature of the things. And basically, the demons like Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakasipu, their situation is that all they are is they're floating on the surface. We're talking about this morning in class also, that maybe you have some kind of attachment. You know, you're attached to something like ladies' fashion magazines. You know, you're just addicted to them. You know, who's wearing what? Maybe you're attached to sports, you know, so on. And so you make it boga tyaga, you know. You go ahead and renounce it. I'm not going to buy any more sports magazines. You know? I'm going to throw all my sports magazines away. Okay. But then after like 4 weeks and 3 weeks, you start hearing about games that are coming on and different sports activities. And so sure enough, you're back again. Just really getting into it, you know, buying literature. You know? And so then, yeah, boga tyaga. And this is the mundane ras. The mundane ras is temporary and also superficial. Chapala Sukha. So you start to investigate. I don't want to go on with all this attachment to these sports things. I go up and down. I feel disgusted with myself afterwards. So you start trying to use technique, japa yoga, mantra yoga, whatever, to follow the whole process. Why do I become attracted? What is the satisfaction there? What, because if you find those things, you can adjust them. And it may not be that we have to get rid of anything. We just have to refine it. Get it into its proper position. The sentiments that are there are quite, you know, useful, but they become contaminated by other things. So as you're going on like that, maybe you find the essence of the process and understand, okay, I'm eating too much because I'm not eating the proper food. And therefore my body has to eat more than it requires to extract out, you know, the small quantity of protein or whatever I'm giving it, like that and so on. You know? Okay, so I don't have to give up wanting to eat. Had to give up wanting, you know, give up eating improperly, like that. So we have these attachments, but also then we discover, okay, besides the actual, you know, bona fide motivation there, which can be connected to Krishna, there's also other superficial, you know, things. The material nature is present in the spiritual world, and this describes it actually is you know, temporary and insignificant, you know, like that. Prabhupada calls all these material manifestations as a godless display of energy, you know, a godless display of energy, well-dressed Maya. Because Maya had nothing to offer, really, but she's very well-dressed. So we have to investigate these external things. We discover that actually there's nothing there. You know? It's all this very superficial agitation and stuff. And the only reason we get involved with it is because we're in Maya. We smoke cigarettes. We drink alcohol. You know, we get a body which is tamasic. You know, which is like continuously being on tobacco. You know? And then these small little pleasures, we lose a broad perspective, they seem like all in all. They seem like everything. You know? But actually the fact is that they're just like chapala sukha, very insignificant. You know? And so Lord Varaha comes in this material world and raises the question that actually he's like, you know, somebody, some rich British lord and his friend's young man. They may go to some kind of lower class enjoyment area just to go slumming, to kind of show off their strength and their opulence and, you know, that kind of thing. So anyway, these pastimes, if we go ahead and just read them and study them and chant Hare Krishna, read the prayers by Queen Kunti and so on, then they become revealed. You know? Vasudeva, Bhagavati, Bhakti Yoga, Prayojitaha, Janayati Ashu Vairagyam, Jnanam Chayara Hoitukam. By rendering this unalloyed devotional service to Vasudeva, you know, then automatically detachment from this world and knowledge of who I am becomes automatically manifest like that, so on. Yukta Jnana and Vairagya. So as much as we engage in devotional service, then these pastimes will become more and more intense, you know, and more details. Again, Jayananda told us, the Prabhupada said, if you go on chanting Hare Krishna, you'll see pastimes you never saw in any of my books, like that. You know? So the current situation is that Lord Varaha is doing his duty, even though he's being insulted by the demigods, and not the demigod, but Hiranyaksha, like that. Yeah. And he's thinking of like you know, elephant with his wives. The elephant may want to stay in the water and just chomp the alligator, you know, so on. But he sees his wives are frightened. He's the demigods are frightened. So he goes and accompanies them out of the water and gets them out of the water and so on like that. Yeah. So a lot of, again, what happens in the spiritual world, in the material world, Krishna has to come down and offer us some facility to help us like that and so on. But in the spiritual world, there's the same thing going on. Yeah, some degree maybe. But in the spiritual world, instead of taking, you try to minimize the Lord so our qualities seem great, everybody's giving. Everybody's trying to illuminate all the different qualities of Krishna. You know? And by being illuminated by that and seeing the devotees satisfied in this activity, then Krishna becomes more beautiful. He's expanding his beauty potency. You know? Same way, too, we just don't know what we can do. I mean, one of Nitai Goswami's father, he was a national poet in India. So he was always encouraging everybody to try and write poetry. They never did it before. And they discovered, yeah, I can do it. You know? And then Jagadish Chandra, he was one of Bhakti Swarup Damodar's associates from our Manipuri group. And he was encouraging everybody to play musical instruments. So I got a baritone ukulele. I got a small accordion, you know. And I was trying them, and I discovered, yeah, I can make music. I can play different instruments, you know. So we don't know what potentials we have. Can we draw? Can we play musical instruments? Can we organize things? Will people follow our instructions? You know, we have good enough intelligence to organize things. You know? So it goes on and on like that. So we have newer and newer qualities which actually do allow us to glorify, you know, Krishna. If you're going to glorify a painting, you've got to get a good frame. The color of the frame has to, you know, stimulate, you know, the awareness of certain colors within the picture like that and so on. And also the frame, whether it's an ornate, baroque, rococo, you know, frame, or whether it's art deco, you know, these also in terms create a certain ambience by which we can appreciate the frame, the picture. So that's our job. Krishna's job is to keep on getting more and more funny, more and more, you know, what's the word? Enlivened by our activities in so many ways, and just taking humor from all the things we do, you know, and then we become inspired to do more things. It goes on like that. Prabhupada says the gopis wanted to enjoy more, so Krishna increased their pleasure by 100 times. I think it was 1,000 times. He said. Then he wanted to enjoy more, so Krishna increased their pleasure even another 1,000 times. Like that. And Prabhupada said, And so it kept on going on and on, increasing and increasing. And Prabhupada said, and all they were doing was dancing like that. So it's unlimited how much these possibilities can go on. And practical activity should be in the foreground of spiritual life. So not talking about some pie in the sky in Goloka, but actually talking about, you know, what we can do for Lord Chaitanya here. You know, what we have, qualities we have to offer and stuff, and discovering our abilities like that. And then we experience the very practical reality of what we're talking about, become purified. So anyway, maybe we're also experiencing in our life now, you know, Lakshmi Devi has been dragged down to the ontological aspects of the, what they call it, ocean. And Krishna's coming in some form to try and save her, like that and so on. You know? And I guess we can offer prayers. And seeing here, this part of the pastime is that Krishna is doing everything. If you go to Goloka, it becomes the exact opposite, that other people start taking over Krishna's life. The gopis are just telling Krishna what to do, what to dress, what to say. And of course, Mother Yashoda is also, you know, owns Krishna. Like that. You know? So it's a very, very, what exciting process, and even though we're here now, we can discover that Krishna consciousness is going to be so much fun. And our sentimental speculations about what Goloka can be, there's something there, maybe some perspective, but we realize, wow, this is nothing compared to actually being involved in the activities right now of this Sankirtan. So, any comments or questions about this series of verses? Yeah. Varaha Loka. How to please Lord Varaha.
As you were talking about how we can, for all intents and purposes, we can, if Krishna empowers us, we can do anything in his service. And I was thinking when you were talking about that, about the verse that we sometimes quote, I pretty much almost always quote it before I give a class, Mukham Koroti Vachanam Pangung Langayate Ganim. You know, up there, a mute person can speak eloquent words, Pangung Langayate Ganim, a lame person can cross over hills. So where is that verse? Is that, was that Krishna Das Kaviraj speaking that verse?
It appears in different places, different sections of it. Mukham Karoti, I also like it too. Mukham Karoti Vachalam Pangun Langayate Garinga Pripatamaham Bande Shri Gurun Dinatarinam. I think it's maybe from Krishna Das Kaviraj, but the other one says Paramananda Vardhanam or something. That's a different source. Yeah.
But yeah, if we just
he also says I'm lame and everything else. How does the one go? And you can see, but Shishivada Madam Mohara, my only shelter. Divya Vrindavanam, what's it called? Divya Vrindavanam. Okay, I get what it is now. This is for Radha Madan Mohan. Radha Madan Mohan. Divya Vrindavanam. I can't remember where it goes. It'll come back.
May the saints
uphold me with the staff of their knowledge. Yeah. Exactly. I'd also like it too, but exactly, I can't remember the exact location where it's from. But also it says that, by the mukam karoti vachalam. Mukam means mute.
Yeah.
Karoti, he becomes vachalam, eloquent.
Vachalam, he's able to speak eloquent words.
Yeah, mukam karoti, he becomes a vachalam, eloquent speaker. Mukam karoti vachalam. Pangun is somebody who's lame. Pangun. Pangun langayate, he's dispatched, sent. You don't send a lame guy across.
He cross over.
He's being sent. Mukham Karoti Vachalam Pangun Langayate Garim. He's being sent to cross over mountains and being dispatched. Mukham Karoti Vachalam Pangun Langayate Yakripa Tamaham Bande, by the mercy of spiritual master. And Krishna Das Kaviraj also says, by the mercy of spiritual master, the Panchatattva, a blind man can see the stars in the sky. An unqualified person can recite poetry. The one I always remember is that a dog can swim over the ocean.
It's similar to in Gita where Krishna says, Mamaivete nihita purvameva nimitta matra bhavasabhi sachin. He told Arjuna that, just be my instrument. I've already killed them. It's already done. Just take the credit. I take the credit, but be my instrument. It's already done. So Krishna can do anything. Therefore, if it's Krishna's desire, Prabhupada's desire, we can do anything. I guess the famous story was when Prabhupada wanted all the books translated by a certain amount of time, and Rameswara Maharaj at the time went, and maybe not Maharaj at the time, I'm not sure, but he told Prabhupada that this just absolutely wasn't possible. It couldn't be done. And Prabhupada said, can't, that's in the Fool's Dictionary, and then it was done.
Yeah, impossible. Yeah, but then they had to go back and correct them afterwards too. Things. Wow. Yeah. And of course, but with the empowerment too. It's like touch the head and something. Maybe something like that. Actually, you describe the mental devotion by glancing, by everything else. But it's just by associating with the stuff. By associating with his lila and his pastimes, we become enriched with the same qualities and abilities and stuff like that, and so on. So we can participate. Like you say, we do a very small amount in the whole process. But at the same time, too, it's essential. You know, mother is making ask the little girl what she wants to make for her daddy's birthday, and she picks out a certain kind of cookie. So she measures things up, and she has her daughter then and stirring the batter, and it has to be stirred, everything's mixed up. So it has to be done, you know, and so on. And so did you make these cookies for me? I did something. Yeah, you did something. It was real, you know, so on. And so we're very small, but at the same time, too, we have something which is very important to contribute, like that, and so on. So it's very simple, actually. In some ways, there's not much you can say about these things. The verses could even take like several verses at one time here, it seems, you know? Because there's basically lila. It's more like a matter of relishing. I've heard that one devotee said he wanted to go and live at Radhakund. Mataji, maybe. He said, what do you do there? And she said, oh, I'll do sankirtan. And Prabhupada laughed and shook his head. He said, no, Radhakund is not for sankirtan. Radhakund is for relishing. Yeah. So without relishing, how are you going to do sankirtan? You got to taste it and then incorporate it and change it into your body. And once you're changed like that, you know, once you got a new Superman shirt, you want to go out and walk around in the neighborhood and show all your friends your new Superman shirt. Yeah. Super bore. There's an Indian, used to be, I remember still going on, a guy named Shaktiman. You know Shaktiman? Indian movie character. Not a movie, it was like a television thing. And it was like, okay, Superman, you know, but it was Shaktiman. And he would ride a white horse, he had a white cape, and he had a white German Shepherd type dog, you know. It's really strange. It's like a 1955, you know, make of the thing. So he would be riding his horse, you know, in the opening scenes, he would go down like some little thing, come up the opposite side, the dog would be running behind him. And Shaktiman, little. And the dog, the look in the dog's face was like, oh, God, this is the 14th time we've done this. Are these guys going to get it straightened out? Like that. Yeah. So this whole pastime of Lord Varaha is so funny. Wonderful, you know, used to a wonderful program. All these pastimes, we should do them, like make nice dramas out of them. And, of course, again, they're not for everybody. You know, some of these things, your Sunday feast, and we're already into the third canto, which means you should be following the four principles. Otherwise, how are you going to appreciate these things? You know? You believe that God is a giant red pig with a stick? Yes, I believe. And Santa Claus, too. Okay, I guess we're gonna go here. I'm having some hysteria and everything else from traveling and everything else. It's amazing because tonight's going to be the gala event. We give every Wednesday night we have a Bhakti Shastri workshop online. So tonight they're having the 50th anniversary of ISKCON here, and they made it into a black tie event, you know. And so they have 300 seats, and all 300 seats are sold out. It's $250 a ticket and 350 seats. And they have congressmen and judges and everything else, satias here. And I'm going to talk for 5 minutes. And you have maybe like six people, devotees talking about different topics. Radhika is going to give a little broader description of the history and glories of ISKCON, and different judges and people who've known ISKCON and so on. It looks like it might be tolerable. That's one of the hellish things, you know, being a sannyasi, is many times you've got to sit there for hour after hour in the hot sun with people talking in a foreign language, and you've got to look interested, you know, and keep them falling asleep from being burned to death, you know. So one of the modern austerities of being a sannyasi, you know. And then also that the devotees, it's all sold out. People are pushing to get tickets, and no more tickets, you know. You've already squeezed another table in. And then the devotees, the advertising went up. The devotees have to either go in a tuxedo, or she better wear a pure silk dhoti and kurta, and one of these like regular like jacket, like Nehru jackets and stuff like that and so on. And the ladies had to wear silk sari. So it's really, and Tamal Krishnamurti, I think, would really love this. You know, he just liked these big formalities and distinguished people and authorities and stuff like that and so on.
What are you going to wear, Maharaj?
Yogeshwar is here with, here comes the sun.
And the are you wearing a black tie?
Huh?
What are you wearing?
Are you wearing a black tie?
I'm going to wear a black dhoti with you. they didn't tell us. But the thing is bizarre. I'm the lowest rank of sannyasis here. I only have T-shirts. haven't got any kurtas, but I have one new pullover. Again, maybe I'll get that off. And then I'm going to talk about the educational contribution to the ISKCON. So my idea was talking about death like that, and now we're teaching people to surpass death. And everybody's sitting there and studying the black tuxedos and silk saris and high-heeled shoes, talking about how the material world is illusion. So anyway, I've got to figure out like what I'm going to talk about tonight. It's really an incredible program. Whenever I was with Tamal Krishnamurti, this big contrast was there, you know, and stuff. And he was also noting it. You know, that he's got all these formalities. And his aunt was the first lady to be a member of the Austrian Parliament, a big Kshatriya family and stuff. It's my exact opposite. You go to breakfast with him, and there'd be eight, ten more people. There'd be, you know, two different kinds of forks and everything else, one for the fruit, one for this. And I was just totally bewildered, you know, what to do, like that and so on. If I'd even like started to eat with my hands, it would have been just, you know, two big men would have just picked me up and just carried me out of the room, kicking and screaming. So thank you all very much, and please pray for us, and hopefully we'll still be alive tomorrow morning.
Thank you, Maharaj, so much. We'll see you back here next week.
In Hawaii, where you can pick your breakfast off the trees. Yeah.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Good talk.
Bye.
Bye. See you, buddy, tomorrow. Hari Bol.